Yes, a simple majority, 5 members.
Who do you have with you already? Malik gazed up at the bright blue sky.
Oh, I think I can safely count on India and Black Africa.
And the Russian Federation, of course.
Of course. Latin America is doubtful. Much of Randolph's operations on Earth are still headquartered in Caracas.
Greater East Asia?
Yamagata still controls them.
I see. What about the Islamic League?
That old fool Sibuti will jump in whichever direction he thinks will be the winner. He won't cast his vote until he sees what the others do.
That leaves North America and Europe.
North America will vote in favor of confiscation.
Gaetano looked impressed.
You are certain?
I thought that Jane Scanwell was, well, you know.
She will vote my way.
That gives you 4 assured votes.
You could be the final nail in Randolph's coffin.
With a smile, Gaetano asked, What's in it for United Europe? Malik noticed that the Italian was delicate enough to refrain from asking for a personal reward, although both men knew what his words actually meant. And, the Russian also noted, Gaetano was no longer watching the women strolling past. His eyes were locked on Malik's, hot with ambition. 8. Dean Ingersoll looked up from his desktop display screen and gazed out at the floor of the power plant, 2 stories below his office window. He smiled to himself. Spend so much time looking at the damn screen, you can forget what the hell the numbers are all about. He got to his feet, a solid, square-shouldered man of middle years, slightly graying, his face weathered from spending as much time up in the hills as he could possibly spare from his work and family. The fishing had gone all to hell years ago. Acid rain had devastated the woods and poisoned the lakes. There were the snowmelt streams in the spring, of course, but the state only stocked them once a year, and the next day the stream banks were wall-to-wall with once-a-year fishermen who left a midden heap of beer cans and other trash after they drove back to their condos and tract houses. Besides, the past 3 years in a row there had been so little snow that the streams were too feeble to be stocked. No, Ingersoll went up into the hills to dream about how all the forest and the deer and even the fish would come back one day. He hoped he lived long enough to see it. What was going to make this miracle of regeneration possible was the shining, nearly silent machine he was watching now, smiling like Moses must have when he saw the Promised Land. Beneath his appreciative eyes, the fusion power generator hummed to itself as it transmuted deuterium from the sea and helium-3 from the moon into pure energy. Fusion was the hope that made Ingersoll smile. Fusion power was beginning to replace fossil fuels and even the old uranium-based fission plants. The hope of the future, Ingersoll told himself. Maybe my grandchildren will be able to see the woods in bloom again. He took his windbreaker from its peg on the back of his office door and headed out for the parking lot, where his electric bike waited. It was his own design. You pedaled most of the time, using the little electric motor only to help you up hills. Charged up the battery while you were pedaling. Clean and efficient, as long as you lived close enough to the office. The night shift was coming in as he left. All 4 of them. Ingersoll's fellow day shift workers were kibitzing with them as he waved to them all and went out into the late afternoon sunshine. There's a fusion generator for you, he said to himself as he squinted through the bare trees of the westering sun, red from the dust and pollution of the city down in the valley. Been shining for 5 billion years and has at least 5 billion more to go. Talk about reliability. Don was at the parking lot gate, trudging slowly back and forth across the entrance with a new sign. No more nukes, it said, just like the tattered old one Don had carried for so many years that it had become practically illegible. Ingersoll pedaled up to the lone demonstrator and stopped, 1 booted foot lightly touching the paving. Hey, Don, how's it going? Don Knight was Ingersoll's age. They had gone to kindergarten together. But Don appeared much older, perhaps because of the long gray beard he had allowed to grow down his chest. He had always looked frail, ascetic, but he had never been sick a day in his life as far as Ingersoll knew.
Not bad, Dean. Nice day, huh?
Ingersoll looked around at the dead trees and the pale sky beyond them.
Yes, it was. I wouldn't know. Been inside all day.
Thought I saw a robin, said Don.
Going home now?
Might as well. I want a lift in my car. We can stow the bike in the back seat.
Ingersoll shook his head. You still driving that gas burner?
Nope. My royalty check finally came in. I bought a new Barracuda.
Another gas burner?
Why didn't you get one of the electrics?
Don made a face from behind his beard.
No zip. No fun to drive.
Don, Ingersoll had asked the question hundreds of times before, maybe thousands, but he had never been satisfied with the answer.
Why in hell do you still tromp around here? I mean, nobody pays any attention to you at all.
That's not entirely so,
Knight replied, not in the least defensive.
Last August, the TV news people came out for the anniversary of Hiroshima.
But this is a fusion generator. It's got nothing to do with Hiroshima.
It's nuclear, isn't it?
So's the sun, for God's sake.
Don shook his head. His beard swayed back and forth like a horse's tail.
My father was anti-nuke. My mother was anti-nuke. I know that there's hardly any of us left, but somebody's got to keep the protest going.
Why? It's wrong. It's stupid. Don did not get angry. Instead, he smiled benignly, like a saint listening to the foibles of a sinner.
Nuclear power is wrong, Dean. Radiation is bad. I don't care what you think or what the rest of the world thinks. I know what I believe.
Ingersoll shrugged. He had been through this with his old friend since boyhood. Want to have a beer down at Suter's?
Good idea, said Don.
See you there.
The nuclear engineer got on his bike. The protester ambled to his shining new convertible, tossed his sign in the back seat, and took off with a roar and a cloud of exhaust gas. The Yamagata family estate was set on a rugged hillside, high above the towers and apartment blocks of Kyoto. Built like a medieval Japanese fortress, the solid yet graceful buildings always made Dan think of poetry frozen into shapes of wood and stone. Much of the inner courtyard was given to an exquisitely maintained sand garden. There were green vistas at every turn as well. Gardens and woods, and off in the distance a glimpse through tall old trees of Lake Biwa glittering in the sun. The helicopter settled down, turbines screeching in the outer courtyard. Dan unbuckled from his seat and was through the hatch before the pilot was able to stop the rotors. Squinting through the dust kicked up by the downwash, Dan saw Nobuhiko standing at the gate to the inner courtyard. Saito Yamagata's only legitimate son was wearing a Western business suit of pale blue. His lean, angular face looked solemn as Dan approached him. By damn, he must be nearly 35 by now, Dan thought, struck all over again by how much Nobo looked like his father did when they had been building the first solar power satellite, but almost a foot taller. It always surprised Dan to realize that Nobuhiko was taller than he was himself by several inches. The two men bowed simultaneously, then grasped each other's hand.
Nobo, how is he?
The younger man made a tight smile.
Drinking sake and complaining about the GEC's new tax ruling.
He's not in pain?
He doesn't show any pain.
They walked along a path of stones set in the carefully raked sand garden. Dan noticed that a few new rocks had been placed off in one corner of the garden, by the miniature olive tree he had given Sai many years earlier. Half the year the tree was covered by a transparent plastic dome, heated and protected from the winter wind.
How are you? Dan asked.
Nobo's nostrils flared slightly.
I am going to miss him.
They removed their shoes at the open door to the main house. A woman in a carnelian red kimono silently took Dan's travel bag the instant they stepped inside. A servant or a family member, Dan could not tell which. Doesn't matter all that much, he knew. The servants have all been part of the Yamagata family for generations. He heard Saito from halfway down the hall. The old man's rasping voice made the shoji screen walls quiver.
Stop looking so morose! I want to see happy faces, not these long sad frowns. Must I bring in a band of geishas to please me?